14-year-old, and coming in with what seemed to be OCD, that's what our clinic specializes in, I'm still kind of questioning, I'm not quite sure that it is OCD, but there definitely are these kind of obsessive tendencies. His is extremely focused on wanting to become an MMA wrestler as an adult, and so he the kind of compulsive behaviors are that he exercises 3 or more hours every day, sometimes to the point where it makes him cry and basically suffer, but is very attached to the idea of, but I have to in order to be what I want to be.
Okay, great. So just so everyone knows, MMA is mixed martial arts, just in case anybody was unaware of what that stood for. So he wants to be a mixed martial arts wrestler, is that correct?
Right, or fighter.
Yeah.
Fighter.
Mm-hmm. The cage type?
I don't know if it's in a cage. He talks about the ring.
Okay. Yeah. So start us off and take us to a place where you know you're starting to get confused with what it is that he's doing in the room, and maybe share something that he's saying or doing that's creating that experience.
Let's see. So I think part of what I've been kind of trying to take these two different tacks with him, depending on either, what he, I always invite him to, what do you want to share about or what do you want to talk about? And he often doesn't. So what I have anything in particular. So what I am trying to do is either trying to get him to see that it's the way he's responding to these ideas of, I have to be the best, I have to make sure, somebody else could be practicing and working out more than me, that those are the problem, and the way he responds to them is the problem, more accurately, I should say, rather than the fact that he's worried about, what's going to happen. And then the other piece that I'm sometimes trying to do with him is really just connecting with his values, which he definitely would say is becoming an MMA fighter. Okay. And so I'm kind of anything else that you care about. And, we'll get a couple of things, but really it's just my family, being a good person. I think kind of that's pretty much the two things that I can kind of elicit from him.
Okay. So go ahead and drop into a place where you're just being him. And if it gets a little bit challenging because it's hard to role play in, mm-hmm. then just let yourself be confused in what's happening for you in the room, and I'll play off of that.
Okay. So I know, something we talked about before was how I have these feelings and, trying to find healthy ways of responding to them. And I was able to identify what I'm feeling, we talked about, but I can't think of what a healthy action would be. For when I'm feeling sad, or for when I'm feeling angry, or for when I'm disappointed. I don't know what a healthy action would be other than to work out.
Okay, so you're identifying these three experiences. Mm-hmm. Disappointed, sad, and what was the other one?
Angry.
And yeah. Then the way
to... ungrateful. That's another one.
Ungrateful. And what you're asking is, what's the appropriate response to these?
Yeah, we're the workbook thing that we talked about doing too, you know, like, it had me go through that, and, like, I don't know what an action would be.
Okay, so help me out a little bit. Do you mean you don't have any idea what to do when you're feeling these ways?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Except for do mixed martial arts.
Yeah, because when I work out, then, you know, like, I start feeling, like, I feel grateful for just the world, and I'm not worried about other people making fun of me anymore. So, yeah.
It's empowering.
Yeah.
And yet it sounds like there's these other emotional experiences.
Yeah. Well, I only feel good for, like, you know, maybe a minute after I'm done working out. And then all those thoughts and feelings come back.
I notice that when I hear you say a minute, that I have a sinking feeling within myself, because it feels so short.
What do you mean?
That minute of feeling good after you're done is such a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
I feel my own sense of sadness around that place. It makes me want to find a way to share with you that sense of sadness, to take care of it.
Well, can we just make it feel happier instead? Like, that's what I want, is for us to just feel happier.
Sure.
All the time.
Sure. I can understand that desire. It just doesn't work that way. Because if you could have, you would have, right?
Well, when I do that, I feel better. So can I just keep doing that?
You can. But if it's lasting a minute, it means that you have to keep doing it. And then at the end of the minute, you got to start again. And then at the end of the minute, you got to start again. And I can already begin to feel myself be exhausted just talking about it.
So what are you saying?
Well, it seems that maybe, given, and if it's a given, that working out for 3 hours, having a minute break, working out for another 3 hours, having a minute break, etc., isn't going to be very workable, then at the end of that minute, there's something to be done that's different than exercising.
So, like, something, I could, something else?
Yeah, something else, something more sustainable.
Like, what would that be?
Yeah, it's a good question. If you knew I were feeling sad about the end of your minute of happiness, is there anything you'd want to do or say?
Yeah, I tell you, it's okay. Like, don't, we'll be all right.
So you'd have a desire to comfort me in some way. Would it be okay for me to be sad?
No.
So then do I have to work out for 3 hours and
right? You could.
I could, but it wouldn't be workable for me either if it looked like what it looked like for you.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that everybody gets that same feeling that I get. You know, when I work out, like, it's that we talked about, that God feeling where I just, you know, everything is great. And
then it ends.
Yeah. But I can kind of hold on to, like, what it was like. I can remember, like, looking at the trees and just feeling really grateful for, you know, the world and my family and just really, like, loving. Yeah, but I can remember what it was like.
Yeah. And a sense of sadness in me grows as I'm recognizing that it ends and you have to start over again.
Yeah, so are you saying, like, I can't make that, I can't get that God feeling more?
Well, I'm not sure, but I'm worried that it would look like 3 hours, 1 minute, 3 hours, 1 minute, 3 hours, 1 minute. And that's not sustainable.
I haven't tried it yet.
You could try it. Even if I were going to place a bet.
What do you mean?
If I were going to place a bet on whether you could keep it up, I would bet that the answer would be no. So it kind of brings us back to this place. Like I'm mentioning that there's a sadness that I experience that you only get a minute worth of this lasting feeling of God-like happiness. And then it's gone. And starting that exercise again is unsustainable. So I'm just thinking, is there something else that can happen at the end of that minute? Is there something different?
Well, yeah, I don't know. Like, what are you saying I should do?
Well, I'm hoping we're kind of thinking about it together and exploring together. Like, one thing you offered was comfort. But I want to be careful there, too. Because, I don't know. Like, if I could never feel sad, what would that mean about me?
Can I ask you about something else?
I think that is a good idea, but not just yet. Because I'm worried it's going to make us lose our thread, and we have a thread that I think is really important.
What do you mean?
Well, we're looking at this place that's hard, this place of sadness.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling it for you.
You don't have to be sad for me. Yeah, you don't have to be sad for me.
And I don't get to pick that.
Why not?
The sadness shows up as it shows up. I can choose how to relate to my sadness, and I could choose where to share my sadness.
Like what do you mean?
Well, I can push it away and hate it and want it to be gone, or I can make room for it and see it for what it is and be curious about it and see what it has to tell me.
Like, how do you do that?
Yeah, I just ask questions of myself, like, what is this about? And what I noticed is that I felt sad about what was happening for you, and it reminded me, interestingly, it reminded me of a time when I was a little girl and I was picked last to be on a team. I don't know why it took me there, but there's that kind of sadness, a loneliness that I felt. Does any of this ring true for you? Is any of this fit?
Like getting picked last?
Or feeling lonely?
I don't feel lonely.
You don't feel lonely?
No. What about my family? My team.
Then, so I've shared with you like what happens for me and what kind of unfolds for me in this place. So when you reach that end of the minute and your sadness shows up, what is it saying? What's it talking about if it could talk?
No, it doesn't talk.
Okay. Do you feel it anywhere?
What do you mean?
I feel heaviness in my chest when I feel sad.
I don't think I feel it in my chest. I mean, I'm not really sad. You're talking about, like, when it's over? I don't know that I feel sad.
What is it?
I don't know. It's not happy. I want to be that happy again.
Well, so now I'm confused about what you're sharing with me.
Like what?
Well, we were following the path of the minute ends and sadness shows up. And now you're sharing with me that that's not what happens.
I don't know if it's sadness.
Can you describe it?
It's like I just want to get back to the place I was in before.
Okay. So whatever it is, you don't want it.
Yeah, because I want that God feeling again.
Okay. So let's call it. You feel it. And you don't want it.
Yeah.
And so I have sadness about your itness. And the same job remains, is what relationship will you have with your itness in terms of or relative to the same relationship I will have with my sadness about your itness. What do you mean by a relationship? Yeah, I guess it's how I treat myself when I feel sad. And how you treat yourself when you feel it.
Yeah, I think I treat myself, you know, like we talked about how I beat myself up. You know, like I'm not doing things. I'm not doing enough. And that's what I do. Yeah, it'd be like me beating up that little girl for being picked last. You picked up the girl for picking you last? No. It'd be like me beating up myself as that little girl for being picked last. Can you feel
the little girl that
you were? Yeah. You feel the fight in that, the tension in that, the pain in it? Yeah, but I mean, pain is what we need to like get better, get stronger, right? Like if I have a really strong mind and push myself through these things,
that's just a distract.
I'm gonna be a better fighter.
Yeah, we like so that feels like you're heading somewhere else to me. And we're just talking about itness, it. And your relationship to it. The non-God feeling. It feels like it's like me beating up that little girl. And I guess I'd like to see if we can do something different.
Yeah, like what?
Okay, I'm going to pause this, Carla, just
yeah.
For the sake of time.
Sure.
And just get us, I'm going to invite the larger group to join us in conversation. And if you're willing, ask questions about your experience of it. So let me just check in with the group. Did you, hopefully the intrapersonal work was really evident there. I hope it wasn't like a big surprise to anyone in terms of what you saw. Any comments or thoughts about it?
May I say something?
Yeah, please, Simona.
What I saw was that the client couldn't escape. So I think that was a very nice demonstration how to bring it back and back and back. On the other hand, I also was thinking that the MMA mastering is about carrying your pain and getting on, learning to getting on, don't nag about it. And so that might be a struggle in the room as well. I have to lose something, but I also notice that it doesn't work.
Yeah, no, there's definitely some benefits to MMA, right? Like that's clearly, he feels like a god, it's reinforcing, and he gets to be in shape, he gets to move on past his fears, his sadness, his worries. Like there's a lot of reinforcing pieces about the MMA experience. problem is that it's an obsessive behavior, which is causing other problems, it sounds like. There was a, thank you, Simone. There was another comment.
Yeah, I believe it was me.
That's no problem.
So I was struck by the thought that perhaps it wasn't as much sadness that the patient was trying to get rid of, but a sense of vulnerability, like he was dead of being picked on, like bullied. That was my sense. At least he wasn't in touch with the sense of sadness. Although I really liked the perspective taking and you sharing your own sadness, listening to his situation. And he also had some ideas about, you know, wanting to support himself in terms of that. To me, at least, suggested something along values, although I didn't really know how to do it.
Yeah, so it's interesting because we did actually move away from sad, right? And he didn't have a word for it, so I just called it, because what we could end up doing is trying to find a word for it and move us away from the process of what we were doing. So I just named it so that we didn't have to do that. But we didn't have to get distracted by what are we going to call it and what does it feel like or something. Let's just name it and stay with it. I could have picked any name, but I picked it and itness. Any other thoughts or comments?
I wanted to make a comment. Are you able to hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I could see all of the ACT processes here, but I saw so much relational frame theory here. Like, I was writing down all the different relational frames, and I know that's not, you know, the focus of this session, but it was such an interesting weaving in of different framing all at the same time. And within, you know, like that move that you took with using temporal framing and the self-disclosure, and then using a frame of coordination between your self-disclosure and that, you know, going back in your own experience and person's experience, was, I was like, mind blown, Robin. Holy moly, that was incredible. So what I think is so interesting here, to your point, and I'll make myself quick, is that, you know, the whole point of your talk today is about don't get too hung up on technique. And I saw very little technique. I saw a master at relational frame theory of really the foundations that I could pick out all the ACT technique, but, you know, it was such a unique demonstration of ACT without all the technique. And I mean, just really interesting RFT stuff. So beautifully done. Loved seeing it. And Carla, thank you for being willing to demonstrate someone who, like, we would all really struggle with, right? Yeah, thank you, Robin.
Thank you, Sonia. And it's perfectly fine to bring in relational framing. If you want to look at it from that perspective, you could certainly see the temporal framing and the frame of coordination. I coordinated with him and his experience and sort of drew out, like, you know, notice that it's like kicking that little girl who didn't get picked. And, you know, that's sort of like, oh, I'm beating up on myself. He's learning something in that moment. And, you know, we could then keep working on that and turning it into maybe something more compassionate towards himself when he's feeling it, and then not needing to run from it and into the God place that he needs to go to. So, thank you, Sonia. Any other comments or thoughts on
Rowan?
Can I come in there?
Yeah, please.
So what was very striking is that with a 14-year-old who was kind of not really reaching out, was very confused, the picture that came to me is that he was offering a very narrow space for you to tune into exactly at the core of his being, but you constantly were trying to see that you are connected with that core of him. And sometimes even when it was lost, you saw to it that you're again maintaining that connection. So that was really awesome. I think that's what therapy is about, being constantly trying to be connected with that innermost core of the client.
Thank you. Well, and I don't, in the presence, I really am trying to convey, I'm here, I'm holding you capable, I'm holding you as able to do this. My stance is presence, I'm going to persist, I'm going to hang in there that you can do this, right? Like, I'm bringing those things that we were talking about forward in that process. And some of it is a felt quality, right? If it's not coming out in the words, it's in my actions, and that I'm staying with and conveying a message there. And I'm sorry, there was another person who was it Anamika?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I noticed that you used personal disclosure as a, you know, it has had a function, so it wasn't just a technique. And I was wondering how you sensed with the client that it that he got your intention, because for myself, I use it also not just to use it, and I try to sense it to not being just a technique, so that it had a function. But sometimes at the end of a coaching track, I get the feedback that I used personal examples too much, or to say it more directly, you talk about yourself too much, or that is too a bit overdone, but it comes down to that point. So how do you sense that the person next to you, you know, he understands what you're doing? Now, of course, you can see it non-verbally and, you know, stuff like that, but I was struggling with that.
Well, some of it, I'm looking at my impact on them. And so hopefully you're able to see them. If you're doing it on phone, it's harder to do. But if you see them withdrawing, looking down, pulling away, looking tired, looking unavailable, then you probably have lost them, right? And that they're wanting to say something, or they're wanting to share with you. Now, in this sense, part of what I did share a fair bit about my intrapersonal experience, right, in my past, but I would hopefully mold that fairly quickly so that me talking about my relationship with my little girl would shift to him talking about his relationship with himself, and that I would only need to use my example just as a reminder every now and then, and I'd get the focus back on what's happening for him. But I just want to make that, you know, transfer, and then once it's transferred, then just keep him tuned into that process. So yeah, if people are giving you that kind of feedback, then I would be more aware of how much you're offering, and to tune into what you see them doing. Because it's sometimes like what you'll see, and there's a number of things that we'll see when we're in the intrapersonal space and we're sharing too much, is like the clients will tune out and you can see it. You guys know what I'm talking about? You can almost see it in their facial expression. Their eyes will glaze over just a little bit or slightly, or they have to ask you to repeat what you've said, or they're struggling to stay with you or something like that. So you have to tune into, and this is what I said earlier, what is my impact on the other person as well, right? Is what I'm saying landing? Are they with me? Am I balancing how much time they're speaking and how much time I'm speaking? Is that triangle in balance? Is the intervention in there too? And then if you can sort of keep it, you know, moving, balancing, you'll be in much better shape, I think, for those kinds of things.
Thank you.
Let's see, Dario is writing, I noticed how therapist nonverbal behavior was important in this role play when you waved your head like no, no, and kept focused not to lose track. Yeah, so there was one point where Carla was saying, I'm not going to remember exactly what it was, but I was like, I was doing this with my head. Carly, do you
about something else?
Yeah. Say again.
Can I ask you about something else?
Yeah.
Yeah, which I definitely was did on intentionally in that, like, I think he, because he doesn't like going to the place of talking about sadness or being sad, that he'll, you know, he hasn't specifically done this, because I haven't been as good at, like, trying to keep him in that place, but I could totally see him doing that, of, like, let me distract to go to something else.
Yeah, and I think that will move us away from something that's really important. We'll lose our thread, we'll miss an opportunity, basically. And so invited him back. Now, it wouldn't be surprised if he tried again, and I might invite him back again. And then if he did it again, I might say, just notice how hard it is to stay with this piece right here. Like, maybe MMA would be a nice thing to do in this very moment, right? Like, let's get out of this moment right now and go do this. And I might try to be a little playful with him or something like that in that moment. Any other thoughts or comments, Cal?
I really like the way, actually the same thing we were talking about here, is how you coordinated eagerness with sadness, and then with treat myself with treating yourself. And he was going to this place like no pain, no gain, so completely different, like a relational framework network, where there's a really complex network there, and there was really not complex at all, this eagerness, there's nothing basically around it, and you just like, no, we are not going there, like, I'm not going to let you talk about that at all. I just, it was not like a conscious decision to do that.
It was quite conscious, and it hopefully didn't feel non-compassionate, right? Like, I'm still wanting to be in that stance of holding. So even though I'm shaking my head, or it doesn't seem like we should go there, hopefully my presence is one of such where it's still like okay to stay. It's okay for us to be in this place.
Yeah.
I think I even asked at one point, is it okay for me, or maybe 2 points, is it okay for me to be sad? And at first it was no. But then I've linked that up to, well, you know, maybe it's like beating up that little girl, you know, through a sort of not totally evident, subtle process. And he's saying things that are interesting, right? Like, he's like, I would want to comfort you. So we know that there's something going on there from his heart. Like, he knows, like, there's comfort needed in some way. But it's not comfort to make the sadness go away, which I didn't go there yet because I didn't think that was the appropriate time to say something like that. But comfort to hold the sadness, to let it be. Which I would go to eventually, but the timing wasn't right on this particular space to do that. That would come a little bit later down the line.
Can I just ask a technical question there, Robin? Are you in terms of what Carly said, I think that's a really nice summary. In terms of kind of, there's a big network around, you know, no pain, no gain. He's in that a lot of the time and makes sense of it, but the simplicity, yeah, around sort of itness. Are you actually thinking about staying with itness and expanding the network in that moment?
Yeah, no. So let's stay with itness for a bit of time. And I might do things like, because he seems kind of out of touch with it. Like I said, mine feels heavy in my chest. I might, again, where does your itness live? And does it have to say anything? Where else does itness show up, right? And so, I just stay with that word and until he was willing maybe to call it something else.
Yeah.
Is that the kind of question you're asking, Patch?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
It felt like, you know, from the beginning of the session today, really being in process rather than technique. You can see how you could throw techniques at multiple points while Carl was talking, but you're just sitting with, not a lot of techniques really thrown out there. So it's really, it was nice. Thank you.
Yeah.